welcome. This is Niles McFlower for Wildlife Is. And I would like to tell you tonight that, interestingly, tonight's show is going to be a kind of hodgepodge brought together by several shows that I've done recently. And I hope that you will find this interesting. Now, people who have heard the prior shows on these subjects may be able to piece it together themselves a little easier, but if you haven't, don't worry about it, because I'm going to bring it together anyway. And some of this is dealing with metaphysics, of course, which the show is about, and science, but it also is going to be dealing with questions, we'll say, in politics, because I think that we're moving into the political arena time, and I wanted to give people some idea of a yardstick they can use about what they hear in the news, or maybe if they go to various political events. So I think that this is a show that kind of encompasses a large area. Tonight's show is Knowledge versus Wisdom, the Key to Evil. And I hope that you're going to find that by the end of the show, you're really going to have a better grasp on how come some people become evil, and it's going to surprise you that the people who actually do become evil are not who you might suspect. And then in addition to that, it's important to gain the, we'll say, understanding of tonight's show to be able to raise our level of awareness and, most importantly, consciousness in this subject area, because right now I think the world is in jeopardy because so many people literally cannot be aware of or sense evil, and they cannot, unfortunately, understand what evil is, and they don't even know, in many cases, if evil does or does not exist. So I think these are critical elements. They come together nicely in this knowledge versus wisdom, the key to evil. The key being to really recognizing what evil is versus what it isn't, and how we can do something maybe to stop this world from traveling on a very bad end, we'll say, to a very bad end. And I'm hoping that we can maybe make a difference. Let me start, as I usually do, by defining things as they usually need to be defined. And I want to get to some of the really basics of this. So let's talk about knowledge. What the heck is knowledge? We hear about knowledge everywhere from, well, in recorded history, starting for many people in the Old Testament. We understand that knowledge has something to do with evil, because in this context, knowledge is the means, the tree of knowledge, and eating from it, whatever that would entail, we'll talk about that, has some bearing of a means to becoming connected to and being most importantly influenced by evil. That's really the basis. It's influence, isn't it? And so I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes, what that means, the tree of knowledge, and you eat from it. Okay, and then versus wisdom. What is wisdom? And we're going to get into that and the definition. And finally, what is evil? Now, when we talk about knowledge, I would like to define it this way. Think about knowledge as being a peculiar, the province of humans. Not to say that animals can't gain some small fractions of knowledge themselves, but they aren't really that well equipped to do it. The reason being the following. Knowledge is all of the information that we take in, sorted, synthesized in some ways, mostly eliminated or ignored, and then what remains and is put together and organized in a methodology that allows us to use it to gain more awareness and to become later after that even more knowledgeable. So knowledge leads to more knowledge. And it also affects the way we interact with our environment. All of that together is what we would call the synthesis of knowledge that human beings have a peculiar, almost exclusive ability at using at any high or distinctive level. Yes, some more advanced mammals, and especially some of the primates, have shown some ability to learn how to create knowledge and to use the knowledge that they have from what we would consider to be memory of experiences and the application to, so that they can, as we do, use it to interact. But what they can't do very well is to do this on a consistent and regular basis. They gain a little bit here and a little bit there, and over a lifetime may have the basics of knowledge about the world around them with no significant difference between, we'll say, older, more experienced animal and a younger one. The differences are there, but they aren't by any way profound as it would be in a human being. So knowledge in human beings is a big deal, but it has another side to it, and we're going to get to that. Now the question is, what is wisdom then? We know what knowledge is, sort of. I just explained it to some small extent. But wisdom is the ability to use consciousness in combination with knowledge. And this is so important because wisdom is the ability to apply knowledge in ways that are either very giving and helpful to others, or in some respects limiting to others, but beneficial to ourselves. Now, in most metaphysical terms, wisdom is construed to be a thing called love wisdom, or the giving of wisdom. And when it's love wisdom, wisdom really has with it a more than personal view, a more, we'll call it, spiritual and soul-like view, in which the giving of wisdom to others in the process of using wisdom with knowledge is the hallmark or standard for what wisdom really is. But if we're going to be completely straight about this, we've got to realize that it's possible in a relatively narrow range of activities to be wise and not necessarily be giving to anybody other than to ourselves. Under these circumstances, that type of wisdom has its great level of, we'll call it, limitations. And so in today's show, I'm going to be mostly talking about wisdom that is given, not wisdom that is used strictly for the short-term benefit in a material sense in most circumstances for humans, because it is short-term, and in the long-term, if it isn't helpful in giving to others, we end up losing what we gain, and therefore that type of wisdom is truly not wise. It has a contradiction in itself. Finally, what do we mean by evil? Evil is that type of thought that incorporates also power or action that seeks to be independent of and separated from God. It also seeks to destroy or end the growth of God, which is what I refer to as life. So it is against God, and it's against the growing of God through life. And evil uses two things, then. It uses thought, which mostly relies upon some purpose with a small amount of consciousness, so you'll have some consciousness. It tries to hold on to the consciousness it has, but it doesn't try to grow in love or givingness. And at the same time, it is seeking to have power, control over life in general, so that it can be independent of, separated from God. It doesn't. It sees God as a threat to itself, not as a means of growth and benefit. It's a little mixed up, to say the least. And most evil professes that God doesn't exist to others. But in reality, it does, underlying it all, believe there is such a thing as God. But to it, God is the antithesis of what it seeks to be itself. So it could say that the God that other people believe in, it doesn't anyway. And the God that it does believe in is a source of irritation and restriction on it that it doesn't care to have. So looking at it from these standpoints, knowledge versus wisdom, the key to evil, you can start seeing that there's something involved here between these things. But possibly, unless you listen to some other shows that I've done on this, it may not be striking you right now. So you might say, well, I can kind of see something here, but what is he getting at? Okay, so we're going to try to get at this and try to further gain some understanding. Let's go back to knowledge for a little bit, because knowledge is a very interesting part of this whole equation. Knowledge comes from awareness, information. Awareness is our senses work. That's what we call awareness. Each one of our senses is part of this total package of awareness. We have a total of five senses about the world around us, material world in the physical sense. We have five physical senses. We also have five astral senses and five mental senses. But we have two additional senses that animals don't have on a conscious level, and that's a sense of God. We understand God to some extent in one of our senses of God. That's called the heart chakra sense. And we also have a sense of how to create more of God in the crown chakra sense. Evil reverses those senses about God. It seeks to not understand God. It doesn't want to have an understanding of God, and it tries to confuse other people's understanding of God. And if it can, it will even convince others that God doesn't exist, if at all possible. Sometimes it creates atrocious activities to convince people that if there were a God, why would God let that happen? Yeah. Okay, and that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons it sometimes acts out in such, we'll call it, nonsensical ways, because it will expend an enormous amount of energy to torture, destroy people, do terrible things to people, or to things that people care about, because that makes them doubt God. Cunning little thing, isn't it? But at the same time, evil also seeks to, instead of create more of itself into God, it tries to create more of itself away from God in a very dangerous way, by the way. Because when one creates oneself away from God, that's using the crown chakra, head chakra, in that sense, one is not only seeking to destroy God, but has usually within the same mechanism has the danger of destroying oneself at the same time. So the danger of being created for evil is that when it is playing with fire, literally, because it can destroy itself by a boomerang effect of trying to destroy God. And so, but it still does, just so you understand, it will do this. But it is more cautious and somewhat fearful to try to be creative against God, because it leads to its own destruction if it isn't extremely careful and walk a tightrope about doing such. To say the least, most evil eventually is self-destructive, or in some ways of looking at it, evil is always eventually self-destructive if you allow as much as a million years of time to pass. So I will put it in two different contexts. within the reasonable period of time of several people's lifetimes or whatever, evil appears mostly to be self-destructive. But within the context of a very large number of human lifetimes, up to 100,000 to a million years, evil always destroys itself, given enough time. All right, and we'll get into why that's the case. Now, let's go back to the tree of knowledge. Okay, that's pretty cool. The tree of knowledge is a metaphor. And what the tree of knowledge is not the danger. It's eating from the tree of knowledge, which takes the knowledge inside of us, and we become the knowledge rather than to just use the knowledge. When you become the knowledge, you take on the knowledge as a means of self-importance and a belief that you and the knowledge are one, rather than God and you are one. Evil uses this excessively, almost obnoxiously so. And so you find that people who spend a good deal of their time gathering knowledge, and for whatever reasons within themselves, they tend to become the knowledge rather than to just use it, say, to serve others. Then the problem that they have is that as they're doing that, they leave themselves open to being controlled by evil, because once one becomes the knowledge that they gain through their senses, the senses become blind to God. They lose the ability as a unit, all seven of the senses, to collectively sense God. What happens is the heart chakra, the heart sense, that gives us an awareness of God. And the head chakra, which gives us a way to be virtuous, to create more of God by creating more of virtue, God, within ourselves. Those two start to separate. They're called the spiritual senses from the senses that are material, especially physically material, if we're physically alive at the time. And when those separate between each other, knowledge becomes a critical part of us. We think the knowledge we have makes us who we are. And in the race of people as they are today, the human race is a very mentally focused race. It wasn't so if we go back before recorded history, but it is today. And so this, the double whammy of this effect is that here you got all this knowledge that we're identifying as being ourselves. I'm going to give you some examples of this in a minute. And then suddenly we start believing the knowledge is who we are rather than identifying with God, even though sometimes the person can still identify God. In other words, they don't necessarily always lose that God exists or that they could create themselves into a more virtuous person if they wanted to, but because the weight of the separation is so strongly towards knowledge, the person starts identifying more with their knowledge because they're very mentally focused, and that's who they identify themselves to be. And then the knowledge becomes an undoing, so to speak, of the awareness they may have had about God at some point or earlier, usually in their life, before they garnered so much knowledge. Now, who is it that's so dangerously susceptible to this? Well, it's the people who are better educated, usually highly educated. They're people who use the education, particularly in the pursuit of the most important thing to the personality, their subconscious, which is their livelihood, their employment or vocation or profession, if it be, because they may have gained so much knowledge connected to a specific professional kind of career. And these folks in today's world particularly, not so much maybe a few thousand years ago, in today's world particularly, have this tendency to combine egotistically and sometimes arrogantly the knowledge that they have as who they are. Are you following this? I hope you are. And then they gradually, over time, reject more and more of what awareness they had of God and anything about virtue itself, leading from egotism eventually to a state of called arrogance. When that takes place, knowledge has poisoned them. They have eaten from the tree of knowledge, and in eating, the knowledge has become them. That's what that word eating means, consuming the tree. Instead of using the knowledge to be of service to others, which is fine, nothing wrong with that. That can be a very virtuous thing. The knowledge has now become them. This puts them in a very dangerous position, because once the spiritual senses are either separated from the material senses, or they're never joined together in their own right and not used very much in comparison to the amount the material senses are used, the person is in extreme danger of not being able to either understand nor be aware of, or I should say be aware of, nor understand, because it goes in that order, evil. They are not aware of evil. They lose that, and they lose their consciousness of what evil is. And now they can become evil themselves. In order to become evil, a person has to go through these stages then. They have to separate their awareness of God from their awareness of material reality. It's usually done by these days by acquiring a lot of knowledge that they use to create themselves, not to be a benefit either to themselves or to other people, but they use it to say, this is who I am. I am Dr. Blank Blank. I am Professor this. I am Engineer that. And before long, or I'm Scientist this and that. And before long, you have a person who now has left themselves vulnerable to this whole evil trip. Okay? Then what takes place after that has occurred is they then become blind. Blind. Can't see, can't understand, aren't aware of, can't understand evil. And they start, when they start to doubt that there is such a thing as evil, they have already doubted in equal proportions or greater God. So there's this kind of almost balance, not quite, but almost balance between people denying God and having already accepted or not realized and believe that evil, that there is such a thing as evil. It always starts with the material side. Be aware of that. So someone who says, well, I don't know if there's a God, I'm agnostic, you know, but they're not heavily into the knowledge-based issue that I'm talking about in tonight's show, they're not necessarily in any great danger of becoming evil. It's those that have eaten of the tree of knowledge that have the greatest propensity towards this. And once they start also simultaneously then rejecting that there is a God, they've got a problem. They've got a problem. Okay, so this starts them down the road to evil, but it doesn't make them evil yet. There is another stage in this process. Evil is knowledge versus wisdom, so ultimately they have to gain a very significant proportion of knowledge in comparison to wisdom. That's the bottom line. So in order to do that, they have to be encouraged by usually evil itself to start taking actions that are against God. Those actions create forces in the world. Every action that is against God produces a great deal of force, which is why evil is so afraid to create anything that's against God, because it produces a lot of forces that can be self-destructive. But evil's trick is to make sure those forces are always directed at others who are less knowledgeable than evil is. And it uses the knowledge then to overpower and control others. Part of the way it does this is to entice others to seek material things, material outcomes in their life. Evil cares very little, if anything, about material outcomes. It only uses those outcomes to gain power over others. It's the power that it seeks. The things are sought by those who are victimized by evil, but are becoming more and more evil themselves in the process. Okay, I hope you understood that. I went by pretty fast with that. So if we're really, really getting into the bottom of this thing, knowledge versus wisdom is the major component that is driving this whole system. If you had enough wisdom, even though you became possessed to some extent by the knowledge you had, the wisdom would offset it, and you could maintain somewhat of a balance. It wouldn't become evil. Now, it is true that if a person really goes down the heavy knowledge path and gets caught in what is called the hole of knowledge, and especially if they have spiritually disciplined themselves for a while, they will lose most of their spiritual discipline and in the process will become spiritually ambitious, which is one of the few ways outside of material form that people can become evil as well. In those rare circumstances where people do that, they usually end up being something called split disciples. But the most important part about this is that they have carried out a mission, you might say, within themselves to become very unwise and to become the knowledge to a high level that they have about many different areas that they start to use more and more against other people. That makes them like the evil ones who are already doing it to them, you see. It's sort of like a pyramid. And those at the top do it more to those at the bottom, if you can follow what I'm saying, and gain power over those at the bottom. And you start off at the bottom of the pyramid, usually doing it to people who are barely on this path of knowledge versus wisdom. But eventually you can work yourself up. And then those who are much more on that path, you have still power and control over, and you steal energy, you steal power from them to keep your own senses going. Because when the senses are separated, when you have your physical senses separated from your spiritual ones, degradation starts to occur. And to keep the degradation from continuing and to maintain your humanness, of whatever sort you can call it, it's necessary to steal energy from others, power. Energy that is used to produce something is called power. It's either movement or some effect change in form. In this case, it's both, but because the form is the senses themselves. And the movement is the direction of the energy, usually from the person that you're taking it from into your own system. It's a pretty interesting process. It's dangerous. And it is successful to a weird and almost scary level here on this planet Earth. Now, why is it so dangerous here? Well, because Earth was set up as an experiment. We all came here to participate in this crazy experiment in which the most amount of knowledge would be developed in the shortest period of time as the races of humans reach the more monastic or mental level of functioning within each race. And so as we move into our mental self structure, and this has been going on for 1,000 years or so, give or take, in the humans of today, you know, we recognize the humans of today, and it's just incredible that we're set up for this to be accelerated by a factor of 10 times faster than normal. And the way it's set up is that it has to do with the way that rays are focused in to develop our senses at a particular time. And in addition to that, to, we'll say, the unusual development of the five lower senses in human beings at an accelerated rate, so they could unify together faster, with the two senses, the spiritual senses, being accelerated as well, but not in ways that allows them to unify with the lower senses, but because the cost of accelerating these two forms of senses is that they don't go in sync together. In other words, since they're so speeded up in their development, the tricks they used, so to speak, to make this planet work the way it is, so that everything is sped up, causes the spiritual senses in each one of the bodies, but particularly the physical, to not join very rapidly or readily with the material senses, the ones of form. And in a slower-paced developmental world, this takes place more naturally and requires less discipline, which is what's called the focus of consciousness of the human being on making the change. It can be done with less of that. And so on our planet, you have to use discipline to a very high level through a series of things called initiations, which means the human being has to initiate the discipline. It can't come from just environmental factors. And that really accelerates the process, but at the same time, it screws it up. And the chances of joining the separated spiritual senses with the material senses is low. It's actually working against us. Yes, those senses join together real fast. So we are almost instantly aware of God and almost instantly aware of ways that we might grow more godly, while we're almost instantly more aware of knowledge and the environment faster than most other humans do in other worlds. But the joining of these two, it's painfully slow and requires an enormous amount of spiritual discipline to keep it at the same rate it would normally move together. The good news is that by having these come together in their own right, the material senses go together a lot faster and the spiritual senses go together a lot faster, humans have been increased in their development by tenfold. So what would take a million years for humans to develop in terms of their overall consciousness, has, what it would take 10 million years, has taken just a million. That's a pretty fast process. The only problem is keeping the two together, that the senses of our Creator with a sense of materiality and knowledge with wisdom, love, wisdom, of course. Keeping those, because they're represented by knowledge and love, wisdom. And those things are just very, very difficult to do in the world that we presently are on. It's an experiment to see if this process can be managed, and if we can do so without destroying ourselves and the world in the process. There are some great beings that don't think we're going to succeed and never did think we're going to succeed. So, I mean, this is a kind of, we'll call it an all-or-nothing almost experiment that has some serious consequences if it's a nothing. Like the whole world goes kaboom and we start all over again with a different planet. So, I mean, it has some serious problems. Now, do we all sign up for this? Yep. You can't be here. You cannot be here because you came from a soul. We're going back to being our souls in each lifetime. We go through hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes. So we have lots of chances to leave, and we keep choosing to come back. I'm not kidding you. Now, a lot of you would probably say, I don't want to come back. This world sucks. Where do I go to the world where it's slower and it's easier? Well, yeah, every time. You have the choice. I know it's hard to understand, but you're in a higher consciousness. You rejoin with your soul, you're in this higher consciousness, and you say, you know what? It sucks, and it really wasn't a good life last time, but I'll try it again. And it's a choice. We all make it. We're all here by choice. I know that sounds weird. A lot of souls have left. Not as many as stayed, but a lot have gone. A lot of souls said, you know what? Few hundred of lifetimes like this, and I'm ready to go. See ya. It's off to another world where they don't have these severe constraints and strangeness, and a propensity towards evil. Earth is designed to have a real struggle with evil. Wow. Now, you've heard me say this before. I'm going deeper into this subject today because in other shows where I covered pieces of this whole thing, I couldn't get to this level to explain it all. And that has disturbed me for a number of months now. So I want to get to this level because I don't know that anybody else can explain it this way. I know that it doesn't make most people like glaze over, I don't think, but it's and you can re-listen to tonight's show as many times as you want so you can figure out what I'm saying. But the point is that it's really hard to find this information. You'll read about the hall of knowledge and the hall of wisdom, the hall of blind men, whatever that is. Well, I'll explain it later in the show. But the point is, you read about this stuff and you still, you scratch your head and in a mystical way, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But when it's explained the way I hope, demystified, the way I hope I'm explaining it to all of you tonight, I hope this makes a lot of sense. Because there's real practical considerations, we will of course get to them later, about what all this means, particularly right now. I mean, this year, it's like huge. So let's all be concerned about it because it's not some minor issue. This is probably the crux of our very existence. So I would not want to in any way give the impression that this is like idle discussion about some really esoteric and meaningless issue. It's like the bottom line tonight. All right. So looking at this whole process, knowledge versus wisdom, the key to evil. When we get to the point when it is, we'll say, in the person's best interest to resolve this situation, it is usually and oftentimes too late. Now, why is that? I mean, certainly if you can identify what I'm saying, you say, oh, that's me, I got it. That's what my problem is. I got it. I see what the problem is. That you would think that people would just jump up and down and say, yeah, I don't want to become evil. I'll change my ways. I'll change my evil ways. And for most people, I think they believe that. I really do. Now, that being said, despite everything I'm telling you, and everything I tell so many other people, some who are into this very thing at a very deep level, most people fail. They get to the levels that we're talking about, and the reason they fail is they actually either become evil or controlled by evil, and they cease, more importantly, to be loving and wise, and they cease to create more light in the world. Sometimes for a number of lifetimes, sometimes for that million years. Some of them do become just completely evil, and they're gone. Now, why is that? Well, when we come back, we'll talk more about that. We're going to finish up this segment, and we'll go to a break right now, and then we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about knowledge versus wisdom, the key to evil. And I thought it would be appropriate, after we've had some shows dealing with wisdom and evil itself, and actually on knowledge. So, but we haven't really joined these together in a way that kind of makes sense, and I'm hoping tonight's show is going to do that for you. We kind of stopped at the end of the first segment, about how come if I can in 40 minutes explain this well enough, you may not completely understand it, but you got some idea what I'm saying, I hope. Why is it that people who have all this knowledge and some wisdom and that are actually spiritually maybe disciplining themselves, others may not be, but it doesn't matter, how come they can't get this and drag themselves out of this abyss that they may be trying to engulf them into leading a material life that is going to end up being controlled by evil itself. Now, evil doesn't exist in the physical world. It exists in the astral, but it controls us through our desires and feelings. And so how come that isn't going on? I mean, and then it turns people who are physically alive into doing the bidding of evil. And then you could say evil does exist in the physical world, but not as a source, more as an outcome. The outcome is that humans living here are being controlled by more advanced, if you call them that, dark ones from the darkest parts of the astral world. Now, and we call those humans evil, too, of course, but they aren't nearly as evil as the other ones are. So why can't most of those folks just say, hey, I'm going to stop this. I'm not going down this path anymore because this is evil and I don't want to be evil. And here's kind of what goes on. First of all, you have the erosion of the awareness of God. Because even though the spiritual senses are separated and therefore slightly protected, somewhat protected from the gross materiality of the physical senses. Over time, when you separate any sense, the sense that is used the least declines. So it's a sort of like a very slow beginning that the senses of spiritual thought of God decline. God's thought declines in us, another way of saying it. But, and the creation of more virtue or God declines. But, it's so slow we don't notice it. And it takes, by our standards, a long time, like years. So we don't realize that the erosion of those spiritual senses, the awareness of God and the way to create more of God, virtue, create more virtue, more light in the world, in yourself and in others, declines. And the decline is almost always matched by an incline. In the material senses, being focused through our desires into more and more, we'll say, separation from the spiritual. Meaning they're more and more grossly material. And so the person is seduced somewhat by the power aspect as well that the evil ones are feeding the person about. Telling the person, oh, don't worry, you're going to be super great. You're going to be so powerful. You're going to have anything you want, all those material things you've always desired are going to be yours. Plus, on top of it, power. Amazing power. Power to control. Isn't that wonderful? You can control whoever, whatever you want. And all the things that you've lost control in the past because of those spiritual senses, you know that those cause you to lose control. Now, this is aimed right at the personality who seeks to control. It's our subconscious. And then we buy into it. Some, most people, a lot of people, buy into this subconscious state of wanting to be in control through power. That's so they're seduced in two ways. They're seduced through material gain, and the material could be anything. They're seduced, well, actually in three ways. They're seduced through emotional material gain. It's a kind of material side of the desires of the astral nature, of our astral nature. And they're controlled by, and this is overall, this is over all time, this is the general way of this work. And they're controlled by seeking power. And control by energy, taking energy from others and us being the benefactor. Now, in recent times, recent being the last 1,000 or more years, another factor has come into play. And that is knowledge itself, because the person is identifying more and more that they have this knowledge. Knowledge itself also becomes part of the equation these days. So the person also senses that they have all this knowledge because they're taking the information and they're able to create much more knowledge than people could have thousands of years ago. And that increase in knowledge also gives the person a sense of power. You've heard the words, right? Knowledge is power. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that they believe, and it's correct, that they can control others more if they have much more knowledge than them, which is true. And so the increase in knowledge, the increase in meeting their desires, and the increase in having more material things, all coming together to give a person more power and more control over others, seduces them into evil. That's it. And that's taking place at the same time that their awareness of God is diminishing. Little tiny, tiny bit daily. And another way of saying it is that their love wisdom or their overall spiritual consciousness is declining a little bit every day. So slow that evil can't even notice it. And therefore, that's how you become evil. Nobody becomes evil because they really, really, really want to be evil from the very start. They become evil because they don't notice it. Because it's deliberately designed by the dark side to be a seduction, not a process of jumping off a cliff. All right? Now, that leads us into a whole bunch of other questions and thoughts about this process now. Because this thing sounds treacherous and scary, and you should be a bit fearful. Even if you think you really, oh, I understand this guy, I'm never going to become evil. Always respect that this seductive force is very strong. Evil has many tricks, many ways of deceiving even those who have fairly good intentions. So don't, we'll say, delude yourself into believing that just because you listen to this show or you've read a book or two, maybe one of mine, that you're really, oh, that's never going to happen to me. All too often, I've seen many people, some who have read what I've written, go over the edge. And when they do, sadness for everybody, and their life is just literally moving into hell. All right, so then, where does that leave us today? Because there are a lot of factors we need to talk about. The world has gotten to this crazy tipping point, and I'm going to try to describe it for you now. A lot of you call it, oh, it's a 2012 thing, in the fall of 2012. Some people think it's December 21st. Or, bad things, terrible things are going to happen. But you see, what's really the problem with Earth is evil. It's not like, oh, no, it's something in the galactic center is going to swallow us up or something. No, we're swallowing ourselves. We're creating such darkness. We may not get out of it collectively. Just as I just went over how an individual can create darkness that they can't get out of, the whole human race and planet Earth are moving in the same direction. Now, I want to give you some ideas or thoughts about what the practical sides of what this looks like when evil is going on in the world and people aren't noticing it. Evil uses deception. Like, normal folks go for a walk or a drive somewhere. The deception is really relied on two factors about evil. The first is it's so difficult for others to be aware of evil and to become then beyond just aware, knowledgeable, and conscious about evil. I mean, even some of the knowledge is not there because they won't join their senses together with what they see or experience, and their senses don't work very well in evil, all because of what we talked about in the first part of the show. But evil relies upon that, and it's been amazingly successful in convincing huge numbers of people that evil doesn't exist, or whatever we call evil, it's really just poor people who don't have enough education or haven't had enough love in their life, or, you know, somebody didn't give them what they needed when they were young. If we could just give them more now, they'll be fine. Well, we've got to treat them with kid gloves. We have to give them more than their share because they're going down the wrong path, and this will bring them out of it. We'll take from the rich and give to them, and that will solve everything. You know, I mean, all of these kinds of mistaken notions are based upon the ignorance that we have from not being able to see evil, and evil relies upon that. Now, ignorance is part of it, and that's also, in spiritual terms, called delusion. Another part that happens is that at some juncture, at some point, there is a certain level where people can no longer believe that evil even exists. Now, why is that? Well, we already went through some of it. It's because their awareness of God is diminished. Their knowledge of material things has increased enormously. And they think that everything can be explained in terms of knowledge. They usually are extremely unwise in the loving sense. And so they have no love wisdom, very little. And they're already being pushed around by the fears and power of evil itself. This is the point we are at now with a large number of people. How large? In some countries, it's the majority. In other countries, it's reaching the majority. And the world, therefore, is in grave danger. Why? Because when most people feel and think that way, the experiment's over. How does it end? It ends with usually a crisis of proportions that and it's the world as we understand it, and certainly human life would not be sustainable. Okay, so you might ask yourself, well, doesn't that, why would evil go down that route? Because it's going to end up killing all the folks that it's getting power from, and then isn't that a bad thing? Now, evil loves to kill a planet because it can go to a more enriched planet and can do the same thing over again with greater knowledge of how to control others. Every time it wins, it doesn't just win something. It's not really concerned about things. It wants more power and more control. Now you could say, well, will the planet just disappear? No, the planet does not necessarily disappear. What happens is it becomes a reservoir of energy that evil uses to go and take over more worlds and more solar systems and more galaxies eventually. So it just uses what's available as a resource until that is gone. So you could say the world becomes enslaved by evil, and then it's used in its enslavement until it's no longer in existence. The life is just squeezed out of the planet. It could take thousands of years in that respect, but once you get into it, there's no getting out of it. There's no known way to reverse evil that has gotten past a certain point. And I'll explain what that point is later. But for right now, the issue is that this is where we're at. The world is reaching the tipping point. Oh, my. Now, what are some of the signs of tipping in a mental evil world? This is what we are in right now. It's in the evil is seeking to gain control over a significant portion of the mental world, and that would give it almost complete control over many, many human beings, over their personalities, and terrible things would happen. Well, it looks like something like this. Evil deceives, as I said earlier, by lying. The lies are pretty severe. Evil says one thing today, and it will say something pretty much the opposite tomorrow. It doesn't care about the fact that it lies. As a matter of fact, it rather enjoys it because it gains power over others in the process. Now you could say, well, why does anybody believe these lies? Because they are lies of knowledge, not of wisdom, and they use knowledge in twisted ways that makes people feel in some material sense like they're getting something for nothing. So evil's methodology is to try to convince us we're going to get something for nothing. And I will go into those specifics in a little bit. You're going to get something for nothing. At the same time, you are going to have more knowledge. And the knowledge is not going to be wise. It is going to be actually untruthful because it's all based on lies from one day to the next. It's one lie, next lie, next lie. But the knowledge, nonetheless, is there. It's created knowledge that's untrue, but it's knowledge. And that knowledge allows us with the beginning sense that we are getting something for nothing to replace the love that evil doesn't have. Evil has no love. But it does have ways of convincing us that we're going to get something for nothing. And so that's what evil does. And it has this methodology down to a T. In the mental world, when it applies this system, it creates things called propaganda. Some people these days call it spin. But whatever, it's lie after lie after lie to convince us we're going to get something for nothing, and we don't believe that that's suspicious or a problem. And in the long run, our desires and our material needs are going to be met, okay? And there is nothing that we can be aware of that we're losing, except we're losing our awareness of God and our connection to our soul. But other than that, everything seems to be fine. Wow. That's a pretty scary system. Now, let me give you in comparison how evil worked thousands of years ago. It didn't use this mental method. It ran around creating grave fears in people by torture and by acts of brutality and war, and used just brute force all over the place. And when it didn't do that, it used cunning ways of, we'll say, removing material wealth from people without them even being able to stop it or control it, with a sense of complete, we'll say, helplessness. These things that that evil did thousands of years ago, up to even hundreds of years ago, was still used to some extent, although the new way is to replace it with the mental side, were effective for the day and age, but they did not in themselves get people to identify with knowledge. Remember? That's the key component today. So the evil couldn't build on it. It could get people to be afraid at the moment, but once they got over their fears or it didn't matter anymore, they were going to fight back or do whatever they could, then it ceased to have the upper hand. Today, that's not true. It doesn't use these methods anymore. It convinces us we're going to get something for nothing, which replaces our real consciousness, our love, with knowledge. It tells us all the knowledge that we're going to get is going to allow us to get all we want. Now, not everybody's going to get this. Evil makes sure that just the folks who are selfish enough to be convinced by the system of getting something for nothing will go along with them, and then they have those folks go after and destroy and take from the folks who are wise enough to know at least that that ain't going to work that way. Okay? So you don't have evil just benefiting at some point eventually the majority of folks who think they're going to get something for nothing, but they also convince them that they've got to stop the folks who know better, quote unquote, and who see the evil. You got to get rid of them too. And you get rid of them by using force if necessary. You get rid of them by restricting them and by taking all of their power in a material sense, by taking all of the things they have. Now, evil doesn't end up usually destroying the spiritual side of those that have the consciousness to realize what's going on. But as long as they can keep them from doing anything significant to change what evil's doing, evil's not worried about it. Eventually, the masses will take care of them, and if they can get far more than the majority of people involved on their side of things, they're going to take over the world. And once they take over the world, they will just enslave everybody. And then everybody will be through the illusion of getting something for nothing and not having any love for anyone else and losing all constructs of God will become easy pickings to just enslave for thousands of years until life itself is snuffed out on Earth. This is evil's plan. How does it work? What does it do? Well, why don't we just take a little bit of a break right now, and I'll come back to that and show you how it works in a more, we'll say, plain English way, give you some examples, and so you can see what I'm talking about. Okay? So I wanted to mention to you, as a matter of fact, today I visited over at the Eye Center, Dr. David Stacy, OD, and Lorraine and Christy, his assistants. Yeah, hi, if you can hear me out there. I don't know if they're listening tonight. I think they have some other things they might be doing. But anyway, if you haven't gone there already, some of you might have, you should try them out because they work hard to try to make sure that your vision is going to work. And if you have tricky vision, I have some tricky vision, you may want to try contact lenses or something like that. Those are hard things to get to see right with. I can tell you that, you know. And unlike glasses, which have their own problems, but they're easy to manage compared to contact lenses. It's a real art as much as a science. I can say that from my own experience. And you've got to have someone who's willing to, work with you about it. If you go to places where they aren't, where it's like a cattle call and everybody comes in, you got your 15 minutes and that's it. Here's your script. They plug these things in your eyes and they either don't work or they're uncomfortable or whatever the story might be. You got some issues. Now, if you're also for glasses, there's some kinds of glasses that are tricky too. They're called progressive lenses and this and that. And, that's not so easy to find something to work for people either. The thing I like about the Eye Center is that Dr. Stacy is, and he has a partner. I have not met his partner because I go to see Dr. Stacy kind of an alternating days. But they try to find the solution of what the patient really needs. And I like that because they don't charge any more for it, which is amazing because they spend a lot more time. That's a whole philosophy thing. Now, I think that that's a wonderful thing that they're doing because they're not just concerned about the bottom line. Well, they sure have to eat every day, I'm sure. And so the thing that's kind of cool about this is you go there, and you can go there with the expectation that somehow you're going to work this thing out, even if you've had some bad experiences before with different optometrists or even ophthalmologists. You may give them a shot because they're likely to find some solution for you that wasn't found before. At a cost you probably can afford, too. I've gone to some esoteric doctors, I'll call them, who charged me an arm and a leg, and they never did anything for me. Sometimes they just literally were 100% unsuccessful, but they sure had some nice dinners on me. So at any rate, you might want to look at this place. You can phone them at 480-899-0188. That's their phone number. They're 2974 North Alma School Road, Suite 3, in Chandler, Arizona. And they're on the southwest corner of Alma School and Elliott in Chandler. Now, I know that some of you are not in Phoenix, but I'm telling you, you could probably find a place like the Eye Center around you, if you're at least living in the States. And that's something to consider. So today's commercial is for all those folks, all those physicians who are trying to be more of service to their patients than just to, fulfill their budget. And if you want to, you can go to theeyecenter.org and check them out on the Internet, too. It's the Eye Center, Dr. Stacy, O.D., and, of course, Lorraine and Christy, his assistants. Check them out. One more time, the phone number is 480-899-0188 over in Chandler. Okay, let's come back to knowledge versus wisdom, the key to evil. And I'll give you some of my thoughts now about what this really is about. And the biggest problem that I can think of is that evil is attempting to take over the world in many different ways, but the easiest and most direct way is through government, or what is called the First Reich. The First Reich has two sides to it. It's either creative or it's destructive. Evil likes to destroy. And it likes to destroy the concepts about God, awareness about God, etc. And it wants to create a world of lies, cheating, darkness, power, and control that it has over what will be left of enslaved humans. And the methods that are employed are propaganda, lies that are meant to confuse, meant to convince us that we can get something for nothing, and in the process we can gain control over others who don't believe we can get something for nothing, but we can take from them. Okay, you got that. That's what I said a few minutes ago. Now, I need to tell you there's certain systems of government that use that specific element, those specific elements. Those systems of government have been around for a while. They developed through the 18th century, the 19th century, and became prominent in the mid-19th century in utopian sorts of ways. And eventually we came to know them as communism. That's one system. And then there were other sorts of ways that resembled communism but had almost the opposite means to the same end in some respects, although they really weren't. They're very, very similar. That looks like fascism. And besides those, then there's the more intellectual thing coming from what is known as progressivism in the 1870s, and that then became socialism. All right. Now, some forms of socialism today, when in very small countries, is not evil. It lacks creativity, and it gives up most of its creative side to become a non-competitive and what it thinks of itself as a something-for-nothing society. Now you say, well, wait a second. Isn't it true that some of the small socialist countries, Iceland or Sweden or whatever, aren't they pretty successful? No. They are successful on the backs of others who do the creating. They themselves are basically, we'll call it, non-growth types of societies. They grow very slowly and they move very slowly in terms of their lifestyle. They can get away with this without going over to the side of evil because they're able to maintain themselves in an equilibrium. And I'll explain that. The equilibrium is one in which, instead of trying to destroy God, they encourage God, in some respects, provided you don't become too creative. In other words, you can be as godly as you want, you can be as religious as you want, you can do anything you want, but just don't create too much. And they believe that the means, okay, of establishing a, we'll call it, a fair world, a fair society, is done by the government controlling major industries and businesses and some other parts of the economy, so that those who have are taken from and given to those who have not, equalizing people in terms of what they materially have, and the people who are the have-nots are almost always in the majority in these situations, and they believe they're getting something for nothing, which I totally love, and the people who are giving to them are made to feel that they're bad if they don't give more and more, usually, to those who have less and less. It makes a society non-creative, non-competitive, non-creative, and it allows people to become, we'll say, less vigilant in their needs to be an individual. God wants us to be individuals, and God wants us to create more with others at the same time. In other words, co-creative, but also individuals. These societies give up individuality in order to have something for nothing for the majority of people. They work for 100 or 200 years, and then they fail. But in the short term, on a small scale, countries that work this way can exist. They won't fail because of evil, but they will fail because of a lack of creativity that eventually erodes both their economy and eventually, because they keep taking from those who slightly create more, eventually is nobody that creates, and the society falls apart. Because if you don't create, you eventually destroy. It's the first right principle. Okay, so those are the exceptions, but the majority, the vast majority, of what we're talking about as evil or dark is a law of what we'll call the communistic, large socialistic means of taking from others, government control, centralized control, and with the belief that a few, through knowledge, sounds familiar, can control the many, taking power from the many and gaining control over them, convincing the many that they're going to get something for nothing. The something for nothing is, oh, you're going to make much more money. We're going to make everything work. You won't ever have to worry about you're having doctor bills or any other kinds of terrible things happen to you. We'll just take care of you all the time. They call it security. The rest of us that know better call it enslavement. But nonetheless, that's the vernacular. Okay, so that's the system that we have to be so diligent about understanding and aware of. What has happened? Well, communism started before Karl Marx and Engels in Germany. It really started in the beginnings of the 19th century through a number of experiments and thoughts that people had about getting out of the old system of lineage and people are special because they're born a certain way or whatever. It had some good ideas, but it was founded on getting something for nothing, and that fairness means that people don't have more than anybody else. Okay. And let's look at the fascistic side of things. Fascism took the idea of socialism and made it into a giant thing and said that socialism should be used by still taking from some and giving it to others, not through economic means, but through force. And so fascism fell into the same camp as communism, because communism believes totally in force if necessary, and sometimes it is always necessary. So you reach these kinds of issues in which it is becoming clear that until about 1900, it was mostly done through force and or delusional, illusion kinds of utopian type of groups. Then about 1900, because we had mass communication more readily available, more people were reading, a lot more people could listen to radio, eventually there was television. But the point is that propaganda became, by leaps and bounds, more effective. You could hear Goebbels giving dictation over the radio about the various Nazi regime, or eventually Joseph Stalin doing something similar. And before long, the taking over of the educational systems and everything else in civilization allowed these kinds of systems to become much more evil, because more knowledge was transmitted and more people were lulled into and convinced that they could get something for nothing if they just don't do anything, or just let the government take over, that this was the aphrodisiac, and knowledge, again, became the grease through propaganda to make it all happen very quickly. What would have normally taken generations to accomplish could be done in a few years. And that's where we come to today. I mean, do we have a much more effectual method than the communist, fascist, larger socialist countries had in the past? The Internet is a major source. But it isn't just the Internet. It's the ability to watch news 24/7, to spin almost anything any way you want, and for people to accept the lies as long as they're getting something for nothing, they believe they are anyway. And the process has reached the highest pitch in all places here in the United States. Now, that's scary, because the United States was the country that was supposed to stop this sort of thing from happening based upon, we'll say, the principles of ageless wisdom applied to government. Problem is, our government has been taken over. It's been sabotaged over the last number of decades. Corruption, politicians seeking power and control, and being easily controlled by evil from the lower parts, especially the eighth sphere of the astral world. Some of them are very, very evil. All of them are evil that are telling us that you can get something for nothing. So I'm letting you know this, straight up. I'm not trying to tell you it should be a blank blank. I don't care if the word Democrat comes to mind. I don't care if you think that you're a Green Party or whatever you are. If you believe you're going to get something for nothing, you're just an enslaved person ready to be slaughtered. And if you further believe that you can only accomplish this by taking in a zero-sum game from those who have more of something, you're really deluded. The greatest delusion is in your mind. And you're more than halfway down the path to that darkness. And if you further believe that you can best accomplish that through some physical force method, even if it's just a sit-in in some park and making rebellious statements, you're really in trouble. I believe in demonstrations from the standpoint of if they are virtuous and help people to become more aware of their creator. But if you're there to try to get something for nothing and to take it from others who you think have something, you're there for evil's intent. I'm making this as brutally direct as I possibly can, because we are at the 11th hour here, folks. The 11th hour. And I want you to think about, I want you to read, I want you to investigate the politicians that you believe in to see if they are telling the truth from one day to the next. Are they saying the same thing today they said last week, last month, last year? Did they write some books? What did they say in there? Are they telling you you can get something for nothing? Are they trying to convince you that others are taking from you because they have something that they created, by the way, and tell you that, well, they didn't really create it. They just stole it from you. You just weren't watching carefully. If you're convinced of those things, or if you're dawdling with that, or if you support those people, you're supporting the destruction of this world. Can I say it any more clear? All right. Let's look at this from another standpoint. Knowledge is a problem if it isn't balanced with the giving of wisdom. So, how much of your life is spent in wisely giving to others so that they do the same? Not wisely giving to others because you give them what they need, because what they need is still not helping them to give to others, is it necessarily? Or what if you don't give them what they need, but what you want to give them because it makes you feel better? Well, that's even worse. And what if the politicians you're supporting are doing more of that? We'll just give to all the folks because we think it's good for them. even if they don't need it, but it will give it to some that do need it. Are you supporting them? You're on the wrong side. Especially if you go back and listen to tonight's show and you understand everything I've been explaining. What about the educational issue? Remember I said they infiltrated the educational issue. Well, if we teach our children these principles, well, everything has got to be fair. And fair means that nobody has more than anybody else. And fair means that some people that create have to give up what they've created to give to others so that everybody's equal. The fact that nobody will be creating anything except their own destruction doesn't matter. And we're all going to get something for nothing from this grand experiment because we're all in it together. Yep. Okay. What if the politicians are printing money to buy off people who believe they can get something for nothing? And in the short run, they do. They get an unemployment check. They get food stamps. They get health care. They get who knows what? Disability care. They become complete, we'll say, wards of the government in one way or another. What's the bottom line for them? What's the bottom line there? You support politicians that do that, you are supporting the whole principle of the dark side. Given something initially that they want and desire, and do it because you convince them that you can magically create something from nothing, and all they have to do is support you so you can take it away from the people who have right now. Of course, it won't be long before those people don't have because you're printing most of the money. And when you print the money, it's a hidden form of a severe tax that leads to inflation. And worse than that, it devalues the money. So nobody has anything really worthwhile by having what we call money. Money is supposed to be compressed time and energy. But the only energy that ever gets compressed is that which is stolen by the politicians and the corrupt ones who use it to gain more and more power and also a few other nice amenities in the material world. Okay, so we have to be very careful here because I'm suggesting that a large number of politicians are corrupt. Are they corrupt in some way, like they get a bag of money every week or something? Not necessarily. They could be corrupt in their minds and in their souls, but not necessarily. They don't have to necessarily all be breaking some tangible law, although many are. And what they do is they also change the law. They change the law to fit their ill-gotten gains and their destructive behaviors. They change the law so that it is the law, that you get something for nothing. When they do that, the whole world is in darkness, if it's done on a worldwide basis. We are close to that, folks. We're really close. Now let's deal with the other issue that evil uses, just so you understand it. I have dealt with the material side. I tried to show you how government, and sometimes education, other parts of society, are used, along with communications, etc., to convince people that the dark side is the good side to go on. But they have other things. Remember, they're also out to destroy God. So how do they do that? Well, they get religions to become nothing more than extensions of this dark system. They use religions to convince people side of existence is what is important. The religion gives to others on a purely personal level. It supports the principle that people should get something for nothing, especially the disadvantaged, the poor, the middle class, any class, as long as you go along with them, and that they gain more power over us all, provided that they support, usually, the government. The religion or religions that don't are suppressed and eventually destroyed. They're destroyed by making rules and laws that are against God. And eventually, those rules and laws are either followed by the religion, or the religion is attacked and maybe even imprisoned. It's happened. It happened before. And it's happening right now in the United States and other countries. Okay, so what other parts of the system do we need to look at? Well, God's consciousness is that you give to others to help them to become giving. In the dark side, you give to others to help them to become more taking. So you have things that are like disastrous expressions of certain kinds of union labor. Not all union labor, don't get me wrong about this. But some types of union labor actually believe that the way they collectively organize themselves is to take from others. How does that make any sense? Well, if you take from others, it's just fair. You're just getting what your fair share is, and everybody else has to give up. That's called zero sum. In other words, someone has to lose for you to gain. Then those unions become less and less creative. They are less, by our standards, in economic terms, less productive. And they take a great deal more from those that are producing, which are usually employers. Sometimes there are other unions that they're taking from, too. And sometimes they just take them from everybody, wherever they can take from. Are all unions like this? No. Some unions actually work to help everybody. But they're rare these days. And they have been since, again, about 1900. And before that, unions weren't that prevalent. So we have a lot of problems. There's a lot of things to be worked out. The most important thing is for all of you who are listening to me to gain some understanding of what evil looks like. Because we don't know. I'm telling you, we don't know. It's growing leaps and bounds. And so many people I talk to have no clue who's evil, who's not, or why. They're just, like, lost. Don't understand it. Don't get it. Now, I'm saying all this with the full knowledge that in about 3.5 months, we're having an election here, right? And that election is going to determine not just the outcome of the United States. The United States is the leading country in the world. As we go, so will the world go. If we adopt the principles of evil, the world will not survive. Neither will the United States as we used to know it. We may still call it that, but outside of the name, it'll be a different place. I know I have no desire to live in such a place. But maybe you didn't know where you're headed. And maybe tonight's show will help you to understand some of the principles of how knowledge versus wisdom is the key to understanding evil. And that if we don't get this down very soon, in the next couple of months, not years, not decades, months, I think it's all over. I think that we have evil at the highest levels, and it's just waiting to take over. It hasn't been able to so far because ultimately it's trying to win the whole ballgame. That means it's got to take over the leading country, which is right here in the United States. Now, I know a lot of you are listening to me outside the United States. You're probably wondering, well, what am I going to do about my country? It's in worse shape than the United States. Maybe not. Remember, I talked about Iceland and about Sweden and Norway. Those kinds of countries are surviving using war methods, but they're still not as bad off as things could go in a leading country with the power and tremendous amount of energy control that the U.S. can exercise over the whole world. If we have a government that goes dark, it's a hopeless situation, in my opinion. I don't think the world gets out of it. And outside of a full-blown civil war, I don't think the United States does either. So it's a really terrible, terrible situation. Frightening at this point. And probably the last time this country's going to have an opportunity to change it without who knows how many deaths and how much gross destruction to the whole planet is in the next couple of months. Now, am I concerned about the way politically things are even happening at the present moment? Sure. I don't believe, and I'm going to say this frankly, that the guy who's running for president against Obama, Romney, has got this down. I sometimes wonder how much he understands about it. And if he does, how come he isn't speaking about some of the things I've spoken to you about tonight? You know, you might say, well, but it's not. It's very esoteric. If he talks this way, people think he's a nutcase and all this other stuff. Well, maybe. But I'm just telling you, if you can't convince people of the darkness that's around them, I don't know how you're going to convince them that you're the person to lead them out of it. It doesn't make any sense to me. If people don't know they're in the darkness and moving further in it, how are they going to say, yeah, we need you to get us out of this? I would say just the opposite. That's the sure way to lose. And in the process, if you spend most of your time defending yourself about nonsensical issues and waste the precious time you've got left doing stupid things like that, in my opinion, you're not going to have the time to get any kind of message that's meaningful out. And I'm telling all of you right now, use this message. Take this message in tonight's show and talk about it with other people. Talk about it with people who disagree with you. I mean, seriously disagree with you. People who are extremely on the left or whatever and have very different views, talk to them about, well, you ever thought about this as really like trying to get something for nothing? And it isn't zero sum that the more people who create, the more society grows. When you don't have creation, that's when things decline. You can't take from those who create and give it to those who aren't creative and expect it to work. It doesn't work that way. You might ask him to read some of Ayn Rand's stuff. Really great book is Atlas Shrugged. Sounds like a strange name. But if you read about half of the book and don't read the long passages that kind of are heavily winded, you get a better read of that book in some cases because you can see the overall theory easier. Some of the book is very difficult because it's so long. So you make it a 550-page read instead of 1,100, and it makes more sense to you. And maybe watch the movie that they made in the first part of the book to save more time. And it's really a week's read. You can get through it. But that book does explain in very, very straightforward terms this concept. Now, there's some other books that are really hard to that explain it more thoroughly. But, you know, they're just so hard. And I don't think a lot of people have the brain power to go into those kinds of works, especially if they have the wrong knowledge already in their head. The other thing you can do is talk about it from the wisdom side. You know, the wisdom side has it, especially when you're making it love wisdom, sometimes it's easier to see it that way. You know, we're really here to help others to become more giving and more creative at the same time. We don't want to make people wards of the state and paralyze them with every kind of welfare program imaginable, because that's the cruelest thing we can do to them. And we're not helping them to become better givers in ways that help others to do the same. We're helping them to become takers. People can get that. They can actually see that. They understand it. And that's a way to talk about tonight's subject that may be simpler and easier than all of the knowledge-based sites that are difficult for people to get because it gets very complicated. What else can we do? Well, you can just compare. You can literally compare what people say from day to day, month to month, year to year. Look at the president and what he's been saying during that time. Look at others that follow him. Read about them, too. What are their belief structures? Do they seem to have a common theme, like communism? Did you know that the president, in one of his books, said he was a communist at that time in college? He said he would meet with the other communists. Smoke some cigarettes, and maybe some other kind of drugs, and sit around and pontificate about the principles of evil. Well, if you think that is good preparation for a politician, then maybe that won't shake you up too much. But then again, read all the things that have been said directly from the people who are saying it. Do they change from 1 week or month to the next based upon who they can convince that they're going to get something for nothing that week or month? And if that's what you hear or see, and you can convince yourself that that's a form of evil by listening over to the show again and read some other books and stuff, then you know where you need to be. Now, even if Romney isn't Mr. Super Great at explaining this stuff, I have heard some things he has said, which indicates that he lives his life by them. And some people that live ways that they can't express as well verbally to others, or they're afraid to, which I think is a little bit of both in this situation. Afraid because people around him think that's bad politics. Think that he should be as slick as the others. I don't know. I remember a lot of people refer to, you know, other presidents as Ronald Reagan is where all the conservatives jump around at, right? But the thing is that the thing I liked about Ronald Reagan, as what I remember, was he said things so plain and simple. I mean, you know, it's morning in America if we can get back to running this system the way it was supposed to be done. I mean, the guy was a pretty straight, you know, pretty straight guy. And the things that attracted me to him in a political sense was he admitted to some mistakes. He was open about what he thought was hard to do. And he was willing to take on the bigger issues and tell people what he really thought about them. These are critical elements, and I would hope that maybe Romney and whoever is going to be running with him will do that. because the truth needs to come out, and it won't in any other way that I can think of. I know there's these super PACs that supposedly are running around making ads that are going to fill in the blanks. But I don't want the blanks filled in. I want the guy that's running for president to say where it's at and not be afraid. And maybe even take a chance that the people in this country and others there's still enough of us that think and are able to have enough consciousness to see the truth as people express it through love, wisdom. And we're not fooled because someone claims they have knowledge, and more importantly, with that knowledge, they're going to give us something for nothing. What could be more boring than to get something for nothing? As you know, Why Life Is, the name of the show, the suggestion is in the name, God created the universe not to give people something for nothing, but give them the opportunity to create for themselves and help others to do the same, rather than to take from others and take the rights from still for others to create for themselves and to make a world that is disappointingly boring, evil, and godless. The world can go godless. Remember, God's not going to get destroyed. God allows this to happen so that humans, the only creatures in the whole universe, that need to go through this great test, need to discover what it means to be against God, so you're more for God. Realize that some find the wrong side and may spend hundreds of thousands or million years pursuing that darkness and doing terrible, atrocious things in the process. This is allowed. Because without freedom, there will not be creativity, and without creativity, God doesn't grow, we don't grow, nothing is here of any meaning or value. A meaningless existence, the ultimate goal of evil, meaninglessness. And before you reach the meaninglessness, you destroy everything else in the process. Wow. Remember, I said at the beginning of the show, the interesting thing about evil is that in the long run, it eventually destroys itself. Because you can't destroy God, even in some, we'll say, metaphorical way, because God could never be destroyed. But you can't destroy God even in a metaphorical way without eventually destroying yourself. So, you could say the cards are stacked or the dice are fixed. The universe is meant to become a grand and wonderful place. But the experiment here on Earth can show at the same time there are some really bad parts of it. And those parts may not survive. It is so important for us here today, now, this whole world to survive. And it's so important that all those who hear me, here in the United States, and for sure in all the other countries that can hear me, that you do what you can to change what you can now. Become aware of each other in all countries and act as a unit to try to convince those who are still asleep, illusioned, selfish, that there's a better way. And it's not a zero-sum game. Everybody can win if everybody chooses to be part of God and seeks to co-create and help others to do the same. It isn't that you want to take from everyone. You want to give collectively, together, and create yourself individually, all at the same time. This is God's plan. This is why life is. And we need to do something right now. Right now, to encourage everybody we know to do what they can. This is the time. Now, why is it happening in 2012? Well, because the rate structure is changing and the third ray is crystallized. All kinds of issues come into play at the same time. This is the time that it's hardest to hear and see evil. This is the time when lies, especially these terrible propaganda-type lies, are most effective. We're all losing some sense of being able to even tell that politicians are lying all over the place. I mean, people believe that, but most people aren't even really in-depth catching it. They may ignore it at this point because it's obnoxious to even hear. But we need to not ignore it because it's having an influence on so many. And we have to have a counter-influence, those of us who can get through the illusion as best as we can. We're all going to be somewhat illusioned at some point. But we need to help out those who are really badly. Not because they have to be like us, but because we want them to be free like they can be and create themselves. Free to do so anyway. Not enslaved. Not overpowered by darkness and evil. And not convinced of some intractable and unbelievably stupid idea of getting something for nothing, because that's the fair thing to do. Nothing could be unfair to more people than that. It has to be explained why that is so. It's not that hard to understand, but there is some thought necessary, and the person has to give up some of their knowledge to become more wise. They have to break through the knowledge that's untruthful, that their party says, or that the president says, or that maybe their preacher even says. They've got to do a lot of thinking for themselves. You can't convince them by forcing thought. You have to educate, allow people to think for themselves, and to disagree. Because if we're not allowed to disagree, there can be no freedom either. If we're not allowed to disagree when people are throwing stones and starting fires and yelling and screaming, then there can't be freedom either. And that's all coming next month, or the end of next month, and starting through September. There are plans to do all that that happened last year at a much higher pace. And watch out what that could lead to. Martial law? Maybe forestalling the elections if things aren't going quite right? Who knows? What excuses can be brought in the age of propaganda to convince people that, no, we don't want to be part of this experiment anymore in freedom. We just want things to be secure. Think about that. Think about everything else I've said in tonight's show. I hope this has made some difference. Remember, in order to become truly wise, you go through a stage where knowledge first intrigues and then becomes an albatross. And you go from that into a hole of blindness in which you cannot know for sure what the outcome is going to be because you have to give up so much knowledge. And finally, you become the giving of wisdom itself. That's where you want to end up. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.